So today's topic is a continuation of what we discussed a few weeks ago, that is Matra Panchakam. It is one of the unique compositions of Adi Shankaracharya, probably the greatest name in India's philosophical spiritual tradition. He is more well known as a great philosopher who gave a compact, organized form to Vedantic philosophical tradition. And his name also is widespread as the organizer of no less than 10 monastic orders in India, who gave commentaries on Vedic texts, Vedantic text, Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Sutra, and so on. Of course, I don't have time. I already discussed his contributions in the previous session when we discussed the same poetic classic, Matra Panchakam. It's called a classic because, though it's very short, only 5 verses, it is unique and so well known. So, Matra Panchakam means a composition of 5 verses extolling the role of mother, a biological mother in our life and our own sense of obligations, the sanctity and sacredness of the relationship between mother and her children. So the word Mata, that's a Sanskrit word for mother, it comes from this Sanskrit etymology called mati, or that means that something that measures, that encompasses everything. Now, about this verse itself, a few things. As I mentioned, it is a composition of 5 verses, and the most important aspects of this verse is it emphasizes a sense of gratitude, a sense of obligation to our own biological mother, who may have gone through innumerable sacrifices in bringing us into life and also in bringing up in our early days. The deep emotional bond and also the unpayable debt and a most unbreakable, inseparable spiritual connection. So the first verse itself is an expression of reverence and devotion of a son towards his mother. I already discussed some of the verses, but today we are concluding, so I would give an overall summary of what we already discussed. The first verse refers to the extreme pains and the sacrifices that the mother undergoes, not only before the birth, but also the time of birth and the early days of the child. So the verse has got a very profound message for our own times. That's why I chose this topic for discussion. It's an old-fashioned way of lectures, you know. We can easily talk about Vedanta in Market Street, Vedanta and globalization. These are all very exotic topics, though it may not have anything to do with either Vedanta or globalization. But still, that's a current fashion, and actually it's a betrayal of the true spirit of both Vedanta and also business management. If you talk about Vedanta and its role in business management, it's an act of treason against the fundamental principles of business management and also about Vedanta in a bigger way. So I'm coming back to the subject. The most telling aspect of this verse is that Shankaracharya strongly makes a case for a sense of sanctity and sacredness in human relations. And of different kinds of human relations, The most supreme, most sublime relationship is the relationship between a mother and her child. And in his case, there is a personal reason for it. You know, he was a small child of 6 years when he left his home to become a monk. He had already become a monk mentally. The story goes like this, and it has something to do with India's spiritual culture. You know, he was born as a result of his parents' prayer to Shiva, Lord Vishwanatha. And he appeared in a dream to his father, his parents in a way, and gave this option. If you want a very healthy, long-lived, maybe living 120 years, if you want a long-lived son, it is okay, but you'll be slightly dull and stupid. But if you want a very brilliant, an extraordinarily brilliant person as your son, he'll be certainly the greatest name in the Sanatana tradition, but he'll be short-lived. So originally he was supposed to live only for 16 years. Then when he was 16 years, he had already completed all writings that we are discussing today. So if you go to Kashi and if you go to any of the centers of sacred learning in India, you find this pompous orthodox Brahmins with sacred thread spending 40 years, 50 years to study the books written by this boy of 12, 13 years in 8th century. So he completed all these books that today's pundits take decades to study, master, and discuss and debate. So these are interesting things about it. And the bigger universities, if you go in India and abroad, Advaita Vedanta is the most interesting topic, philosophically speaking, that belongs to oriented tradition. Now, but this is a background. His mother knew he was going to be a monk, and he didn't like it. And that is mentioned in one of the verses here. So I shall read that verse as an introduction. Gurukulam samusrutya svapnakale tadrushta yadi samujita vesham prarudo mam tamuchaihi gurukulam adha sarvam prarudatte samaksham sapati charanayoste madarastu pranamah. So my pranama to my mother. And there is a story mentioned in the second verse of the Mantra Panchaka. When he was a small little boy of 5 years, he was studying the Gurukula. Gurukula means Vedic hermitage, where they used to study all the Vedas under a traditional teacher. So one day this mother saw a dream which to her was a nightmare. The dream was, in the dream mother saw the little child, her son, five-year-old son, in the garb of an ascetic, with a staff, with a stick, going around all over India, begging, teaching, preaching, writing books. But he was no more her near and dear son. He was a world teacher. She didn't like it. She wanted her son to be her son all the life, not a great philosopher. So that broke her heart. And so at midnight, she rushed to the Vedic hermitage near his home, Nisankaracharya's home. And he made a human cry in the hermitage, loudly crying and weeping. So all the teachers and students all came out. They found his mother crying, and the teacher asked her, "What's the matter?" She said, "I saw in my dream that my son had become a monk." Now, there are two aspects about this. Any mother would be happy if her son becomes a monk. And especially in Catholic tradition, it's a fact. In the Catholic tradition, a mother would be normally happy. You can see the story of Saint Joseph of Cupertino. He was born in the, you know, San Francisco, American Cupertino, Tripolitano in Italy, where he was born, in the 12th century, 13th century perhaps. And he was canonized in the later decades of 14th century. He is known as Saint Giuseppe, that's the Italian name. He was born a very dull person. So his mother wanted to dump him in a Franciscan monastery. And he didn't want to be a monk, but at that time, but eventually he became attracted towards this mystical tradition, and eventually he became a great mystic. That's what he called Flying Monk, he's called. Flying Monk. So he's the patron saint of pilots because he could fly in the sky. That's what the story says. And he is considered to be the patron saint of students appearing for examinations. Yes. Because in his theological examination, he had not studied anything. Something he had memorized, St. Paul's letters, St. Paul's first epistle. And that was asked for his examination. He passed. So if you want to appear for an examination without making any preparation, but if you know a little bit, that may be asked, you can pray to St. Joseph. That's the belief. I'm giving an example. So he was dumped in a Franciscan monastery by his mother. But in Indian tradition, parents, they often, very mostly, most frequently, they don't like when their son becomes a monk, because being a monk in Indian tradition means cutting off all connections, absolutely no connection at all. There are some monastic traditions where you can't even see your parents, in some of the more ascetic traditions. So that is the rigor that almost heartbreaking separation that a mother has to face when her son becomes a monk. So this mother, Shankara's mother, for her, this dream was a nightmare. So then the teachers and students came and consoled her. She went back home. That is the central theme of the second verse of the five verse composition. Gurukula Samavati. We went to the Gurukula. The story. Now coming back to the subject, what is the real message of Matru Panchakam? Especially for our own times, it has got a message. The message is, we need to have some sense of sanctity and sacredness in our human life, even for mental health. So that is the most telling message of this great work. If you don't have anyone whom you admire sincerely, not transaction way of I amazing, wonderful, no, that kind of admiration. When we don't have anyone whom we do not sincerely appreciate and respect and treat with reverence, our life can never be happy. We may have 6 feet tall, strong, healthy body, live for 100 years, eating organic food and going to gymnasium every day, but our mind will remain sick. Because our mind doesn't get its emotional nutrition. If we don't have anyone in our life whom we sincerely, not in a transactional way, but sincerely treat with real respect and reverence. Otherwise, our life will be empty, it will be a total vacuum. That is the most telling message of Matru Panchakam. Because it emphasizes the unbreakable, the inseparable, sacred, spiritual connection between a loving mother and her loving son. So look at this verse. Astam tavadiyam prasudhi samaye durvara shuravyatha nairuchyam tanu choshanam malamayi shayya cha samvatsari ekasyabi na garbha bhara bharana kleshasya yasya akshamo dadum niskridim unnatopi tanayas tasyi janinne namaha. The last verse is very important, you know. Dadum Niskrudi, Niskrudim Unnadobi Tanayaha. So even the son may be Napoleon Bonaparte, may be an Einstein, but if he doesn't treat his mother with a sense of sanctity and sacredness, he is not fulfilling his obligation to himself or to his culture and tradition. That is, the literal meaning is, the son may be very high, highly exalted, highly established, a world-conquering military hero like Napoleon Bonaparte, Alexander Hannibal, or a scientist like Einstein, anyone for that matter. Whatever may be the height which is achieved, still, if he doesn't have the sense of sanctity and sacredness in his life, somebody or something whom he considers sincerely reveres with the sanctity and sacredness. Again, the reason why I'm emphasizing this point, transactionalism is the greatest threat to this culture that is depicted in these 5 verses. Transactionism. Everything can be wonderful in an email or telephone conversation. Hi, how are you? Wonderful, fine. But if it doesn't go one inch deeper into the mental system, your mind will be starving, because mind also is looking for some emotional nutrition. And that comes from a sense of sanctity and sacredness and sincere reverence. The sincere, the word adjective is very, very important. Reverence for somebody whom we sincerely respect and reveres. And that is perhaps the most important part of this verse. So that's why here there is a reason for it. There are 2 versions. The standard versions of Shankaracharya's life. He came back to his mother who was about to die, and he uttered the sacred mantras in her ears, and she passed away in perfect tranquility and peace with a kind of spiritual bliss. That was how Shankaracharya's mother left this world. That is one thing. But he says, unless somebody is not able to pay his respects or her respects to mother, at least a sincere prayer for forgiveness is the other alternative that is mentioned towards the end of this verse. Here means niskridim, dadum niskridim unnadobi tanayastasi janani namaha. So nadina means here nobody will be able to pay back the sense of gratitude of debt to the mother for all that she has done for the son. So that is the idea behind. The 3rd verse we discussed to some extent, but I'm not going to repeat again. Perhaps a little bit. Gurugulam samusritya svapnakale tu drishta. This is an old incident he remembers, which I mentioned. The 3rd verse is this. Nadattam madaste marana sabaye toyam abhiva. Suthavanu deya marana divase sadhavidina. Najaptu madaste marana samaye taragamanu. Akale samprapte mai kuru deyam mataha adulam. So the last line contains a verb. Mataha atulam dayam kuru. Mai atulam dayam kuru. This again, it's a bit of a poetic imagination. Among the 5 verses, the most important and famous verse is the 1st one, beginning with Astam Tavadiyam, etc., which refers to the mother's or mother's sufferings and sacrifices that she may have undergone at the time of conceiving the child, and at the time of conceiving the child, and even later on during the early years of the children's growing up. So, according to some scholars, which we are not going to discuss right now, according to some different schools of thought among scholars, only the 1st verse is considered to be authentic. The rest, the other 4 ones, were composed by some of Shankaracharya's followers who made it a panchakam. It was only just one verse, but there is a different subject. We are not concerned with that. The third verse tells you this. He says, so here Shankaracharya is putting, he puts himself in the position of a son who comes with too late to the deathbed of his mother. Man, this mother passes away. Now this is what happens to certain people. So he is placing himself in the position of a son who perhaps was a bit late. By the time he reached home, the mother passes away. So what will be the thought, what should be the thoughts in the mind of an ideal son? That is referred to here. Na dattam madaha te marana samaye toyam apiva. So I couldn't give water at the time of dying. So that is an Hindu tradition, you know, frequently. The sacred duty of a son or a daughter at the time of mother passing away, she or he should offer water in a tulasi leaf, preferably Ganga water. This is normal tradition. And here, Shankaracharya is placing himself in the position of somebody who do that, who failed to do that, because it would be too late while coming home. He says, I could not give you a drop of water at the time of your death. So what a terrible sin I have committed. That's the idea behind. Sotham va no deya marana divase sadha vidina. And again, sadha, sodha, etc. These mantras are normally uttered at the time of sadha. Immediately within a few days, you know, after mother's passing away, there should be ceremony where food is offered ceremonially. That is called sadha, which is frequently repeated every year on the day of the person's passing away. So I could not perform that sacred ritual that after your passing away. Again, the son is going back, his thoughts is going back to the possibility of somebody who was a bit too late, could not pay his debts to his departed mother. Again, this continues. Na japto madaste marana samayi taraka manu. Manu means a mantra. Taraka mantra could mean, you know, Rama mantra, Aditya mantra. These are just pranava, omkara, all these are taraka mantras. Taraka means, say taraka mantra means, mantra means a sacred word symbol. You may call it a prayer, but prayer in a very compressed form, which is being repeated by great spiritual seekers. You know, a mantra becomes a spiritually potent word symbol when it is uttered with great reverence by a number of sincere spiritual seekers for centuries. That word symbol, that mantra, becomes a potent form. If you translate that mantra into English, it would be like comparing a cobra with a Chinese snake. The Chinese snake also, you can play, children play with Chinese snakes, nothing happens to them. But you can't play with a cobra. So the real mantra, Sanskrit mantra, is like the poisonous cobra. Its translation could be like Chinese snake. Means plastic something, made for plastic. So the real mantra is tarakam, is called taraka. Means it takes you across the ocean of samsara. That's the literal meaning. Tarakam means something that helps you to get across the river, or a pond, or an obstacle. So something that saves you by taking you in a ferry across the river of worldliness, takes you towards your spiritual liberation. So, very often when in traditional homes, when parents die, it's the duty of son or daughter, whoever may be the eldest one, to utter this mantra in the ears of the mother, of the sacred person. Here again, well, I should do this as a sacred duty to my mother. This is a spiritual relationship. This conviction takes away a lot of problems in society and also in the life of individuals. When you remove this sanctity, this sacredness, the spiritual dimension of human relations, What happens is, it all becomes like plastic snake, lifeless. Everything becomes transactional. I cannot give names for obvious reasons. There was a very prominent political leader in India who incidentally was a great follower of Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, and who later became a communist. Remember, they say, what a long distance you have to travel from Gandhism to communism. Gandhism is almost a spiritual ideal, at least for politicians, as far as it goes. And the other one is toxic poison. But this man was such an exalted person, a great humanist, very learned person, a man of great sacrifice. He had donated all his property, his huge property, to the party in which he believed. Now, and during the independence struggle, India's independence struggle, during the agitations, he was arrested by the British police. And he had to go incognito, he had to go underworld to save himself from the British police. This happened in, I think, around 1944, 41, around that time. That is the time when India was engaged in this freedom of, in this the struggle of independence, that India's independent struggle. So this man was arrested, was about to be arrested, not exactly arrested. Later he was arrested, but on one occasion, he was about to be arrested. So he went underground. But when he went away from his home, his mother took a promise, extracted a promise from him, compelled him to give a promise. And he was an atheist, but a great Vedic scholar, outstanding Vedic scholar, great Sanskritist, a very wonderful man, very ascetic person. But he was, again, a revolutionary fighting for India's freedom struggle. So when he was about to go underground, because he was fighting for India's independence, his mother, old mother, extracted a promise from him, but you can go, at the time of my death, you should come and utter this. There is a particular Rigveda mantra, which a son is supposed to utter in the ears of dying mother. So you should utter this mantra in my ears. And the son was compelled to give this promise. And I can tell you, he is one of the most unforgettable leaders of that age. He was an agnostic, an atheist, and he had studied the Vedas, but he left all this behind. But he kept up this promise. What happened at the time of the mother's passing away, the son came back to his mother's home and uttered this sacred mantra in the ears of his dying mother. And that man became the most celebrated, the most respected, one of the most celebrated leaders associated with India's freedom struggle, though he was a non-believer in God. He don't care for religion or anything. He was a very ascetic person, man of high morals and high idealism, but he was an agnostic, he was an atheist. So that shows. Now, one may believe, one may not believe. What he says is, when you have something in your life, when you have somebody in your life whom you consider as worthy of respect and reverence, and whose relationship is sacred for you. Unless you don't have this idea of sanctity and sacredness, unless you don't have anyone in your life whom you don't sincerely respect, your life can never be complete. Your life will be always empty, emotionally empty. Because it is this sanctity and sacredness in human relationship that is a nutrition for emotional health, mental health. So that's why this verse is very, very important. So now the fourth and fifth verse we are going to discuss today. The fourth one is very interesting. There, the son is remembering how, with what amount of affection he was brought up by his mother. He's remembering all this. not to be able to remember that they should have lived your life, you should have acted in such a way that you always kept this memory of your mother with a sense of sanctity and sacredness. One may argue with me, and the argument is very welcome. Why should you give importance more importance to mother than father? This question may arise. In fact, Shankaracharya himself answered this in the first verse. Astam tavadiyam prasudhi samaye durvara shulam yatha navirichyam tani shoshanam malamai shayyacha samvatsari. What he says is this. At the time of giving birth to the son, what amount of terrible pains that mother, physical pains, the mother had undergone. Fear and pains the mother had undergone. In fact, the fifth verse refers to that. Ambedi, tadedi, shivedi, tasmin, prasudi kale, yadavocha mucchehi, krishnedi, govinda, hare, bhugundedi, aho janenne, rachidojaliste. Oh, mother, the time of giving birth, because of pain, you have called out the names of all the deities, all the gods and goddesses, Shiva, Vishnu and so on, out of pain. In all different traditions, you know, when they are facing the pain, feeling the pain, they pray to God. They think of them, maybe shouting loudly. That's what Shankaracharya is referring to in the fifth and last verse. So that's a close connection with the first verse. That's one of the reasons why most scholars agree that this was indeed the entire Panchakam in five verses, the poetic classic including five verses, was actually a composition of Adi Shankaracharya himself. So that pain, those sacrifices, and then body becomes weak, you have no taste for food, and then you have to bear with all these inconveniences, painful experiences, that father doesn't have to go through. That's why in the Manu of our ancient Smritis, he says, Ubadhyaya Dashacharya Acharya to Shatam Pida, Gauravena Adirichyate. Sagasrena Adhyam Matuhu Gauravena Adirichyate. The verse is this. So you can see this in human relations. Let's say you are a student in a university. A guest lecturer comes. He's a paid guest lecturer who is invited from another university, who is a specialist. He gives one lecture and he goes away. Such a person is called Ubadhyaya. He doesn't qualified for the position of a full-fledged teacher in the university. He comes once a while, maybe twice a year, for giving some occasional lectures, called Upadhyaya. So the respect that you should give the professor who is teaching the same university is 10 times the amount of respect you give to a guest lecturer. That's why Upadhyaya Dashacharya. Acharya tu Shatam Pida. And what should be the respect you give to your own father? That should be equivalent to 100 times the respect that you give to your actual professor or teacher. Then sahasrenadhikam madhu gauravena adirichyate. The reverence and respect you should give to your mother is 1,000 times the respect you should give to father. So that is the verse that comes from Manu Smriti, Manu's Dharma Shastra, well-known work. So that's why the most inseparable, the most unbreakable spiritual relationship, kinship, is the relationship between a mother and her children. This is an important point. That's why Bhashyakara, the great Shankaracharya himself, say the great man, he had become the most celebrated saint and philosopher of his times, and even today, his spiritual empire continues in India. Wherever you go in India, wherever you find anyone with this cloth, he belongs to one of the 10 monastic orders that he founded in 8th century AD. You cannot have a single monk or nun in Indian tradition whose spiritual lineage has no connection with Shankaracharya's, at least one of the 10 monastic orders of Shankaracharya. And such a man, and is the writer of the most profound philosophical classic, the greatest debate, and so on. Of course, I don't want to go further because it looks like an exaggeration. I quoted my last session, what Annie Besant, Sister Nivedita, Mahatma Gandhi, Vivekananda, and others said about Shankara. So I don't have to go beyond that. So the point is, such a man, he knew that his life will be totally meaningless unless he comes to his mother and take her blessings at the time of her passing away. And there is a very interesting verse in the traditional biography of Shankaracharya, called Shankara Digvijaya, written by Vidyaranya, who was the abbot of Sringeri Math. It's called Shankara Digvijaya. It's in English, in Sanskrit. I think maybe English translation is available. And there is one verse. The verse is Tena Prishta Kusalakshidiraja Swena Sushta Madha Shatrava Kalaha Hardagayita Samarpana Purvakam Nataka Trayam Avochita Purvam. Now, you know why I'm quoting this verse. That shows the personality of this little gentleman, Shankara. He was 5 years old. And he was living in his home. And near the king, the ruling monarch of the kingdom, is called Rajasekhara. He heard of this little boy, the great prodigy. The spiritual and philosophical prodigy. He had studied all the 4 Vedas, Mahabharata, everything before he was 3 years old. So this little gentleman was become so celebrated that the king kept know of him. So what he did, you know, in those days, great aristocrats and kings used to make it an ideal to respect and appreciate and recognize the great musicians and scholars and philosophers of the kingdom. That is the custom even till the later decades of 19th century. So if you read the life of the great German poet Bach, he was recognized for his musical talents by the Prussian monarch Frederick the Great. There are many such examples. Tyagaraja was recognized and appreciated by the local ruler of Tanjore. You can see that. So the king came to know of the extraordinary scholarship and spiritual insight of the little child, 5-year-old Shankara. So, and he was also a great author. He had written 3 well-known Sanskrit plays. So he came to meet Shankara. Before coming personally, he sent his ministers to go and meet this little boy. The ministers came and they gave him some gifts. Those gifts he distributed among the villagers. Then the king was more impressed. The king himself came. When the king came, the boy asked him, Tena Pushta Kusalakshidi Raja, etc. This is how it begins. He was asked him, how are you, all the greetings. Then the king presented to the little boy 3 of his Sanskrit plays. He had not published it, he had not made it well known among pandits, as was the custom in those days. Before that, he wanted the little boy to go through these 5 plays. Natakatrayam avochit apurvam. Natakatrayam means 3 plays. Drama classics. And then Hardagatrayam, I mean, he gave 10,000 gold coins he presented to the little boy. So that is the kind of person we are talking about. This was when he was 5 years old. And he became the celebrated great Shankara, the great teacher of India, Sanatana Dharma, was about less than 32 years before his passing away. He comes back to his mother, and before his mother, he says, I am only a small little child. I still remember the way you were taking care of me when I was small. And he says, Muktamonistum Nayanam Mameti. A mother used to call me Muktamani Mijwel. You know, that's how maybe affectionate mothers will address the little babies. So you are the jewel, Manistum Tayanam, you are my eyes, my ears, you are my king, Rajedi Jivedi Chiram Sudattum. Jivedi Chiram, may you live long. That's the literal translation. The literal translation will be, may you live for eternity. But the normal prayer for a mother, a loving mother, for her son will be, may you live long, may your health be okay. This is how it prays. And the great philosopher is remembering those words that he must have heard as he was a little baby being taken care of by his affectionate mother. So his mind is going back 30 years backward and remembers those affectionate, endearing terms by which he used to be called, addressed by his own mother. Ityuktavatyaha tava vachi mataha. So, used to use all these words many times. Used to utter these words. You are my king, you are my ears, you are my eyes, you are my jewel, and so on. Muktamanistum nayanam amedi, etc. And then used to bless me, Jivedi Chira, Tum Chiram Jiva, means may you live for long. All these blessed words, blissful words, these words full of blessings used to utter. I still remember those words. Dadamyakam Tandulameva Shushkam. And what am I giving back to you now? Nothing. Some dry grains of rice. So grains of dry rice, because that's a tradition Hindu ceremonies. You know, when somebody passes away, he's supposed to begin his journey to next life. So you find a small package will be given, small, a few grains of rice. Shushkam tandula means dry rice grains. That's the only thing I'm giving you back in return for all the affection, blessings, care, all love, all that you have given me all my life. This is how Bhashyakara continues. He concludes the fourth verse of this. The fifth one I already mentioned, so there is no need to repeat. And he concludes by remembering the words that she may have uttered out of pain during the time of giving birth to him. That is, Ambedi, Tadedi, Shivedi, Dasmin, Prasudikale, Yadavocha, Mucchaihi, Krishnedi, Govindahare, Mugundedi, Aho Janenne, Rajido Anjaliste. So, mother, you have gone through all these pains, you have prayed to all these gods and goddesses for my health, for my future, and for your own relief from pains. And all that I'm doing is Janenye aho janenye rachito anjali hite. I'm just putting my palms together, means what you call namaste. I'm just bowing down to you with this anjali, means pranama, this idea. This is a very, very, very important verse. Frequently, this has got a great significance to our own times. Because the problem of our times is, we have lost the sense of sanctity and sacredness, and the spiritual aspect of human relations, because of the utilitarianism, because of transactionism, and also taking everything in a very superficial way. And then, frequently, I was told, you know, why we use the word thank you for everything? Because we can never be really grateful. So, these two words will compensate for everything else. So, actually, it is a very deceptive way. Instead of being grateful, if I can just use two words. So very often, you know, when we don't have this sense of sanctity and sacredness and the sincere association of the spiritual kinship, what happens is we starve emotionally. Our emotions and feelings, our mind do not get spiritual nutrition. As a result, in society you find problems when family institutions collapse, when institutions of marriage lose their sense of sanctity and sacredness. What happens is it manifests in so many different ways: anxiety, depression, violence, all these problems. So this verse has got a great significance. I did that. The spiritual kinship. Again, the concept of the sacred, the ideal of the sacred in human relations. This is the most central theme and message of this verse. So I was trying to give a very short, brief exposition of this unique work. Thank you so much. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.